Hello, this is Chris Nelson for evolvedconsciousness.org. I'll be reading the etymological article on living, experience, action, choice, and emotion. And this deals with many other words as well. It's to clarify the meaning of words as they relate to reality that we can observe and detect around us. And it's also this deals with symbols through words and how they reflect reality. So it also deals with understanding reality in ourselves. So it's important to know how to think and how to process reality. So if you have not gone through the Language and Reality series and the Metaphysics Language and Reality presentation and the previous articles on axioms, existence, consciousness, and identity, and other etymological breakdowns on words and such as tracing reality, a visionary quest to wisdom, on words, reality, and proportions, many other articles and audios that I've done to help provide an understanding of the foundation of words we use to make sense of our reality. Well, this is a continuation of that theme that I do work on, to provide clarity in understanding reality. So this one's going to relate to, as the image indicates in this presentation, in this article, the six kingdoms of life, because we're dealing with living, experience, action, choice, and emotion. So the six kingdoms of life, you have very, very small aspects, like different bacterias, and you have fungi, and then you have plants, and then you have animals. Animals are the sixth kingdom. They're the most complex. They have the most diversity in terms of what they can do with themselves and their ability to alter the environment through the creative capacity. And humans have the greatest capacity of creativity and the greatest capacity of free will compared to other animals. And that's why we have the greatest capacity for good and evil. And this has to do with higher order consciousness that comes with that greater complexity as the highest kingdom of life and as the highest development in our particular kingdom of the animal kind. Many people don't understand the fundamental difference between animals and plants, and they like to equate them in order to validate their immoral and evil actions towards animals. Because once you equate them with plants, well, then it doesn't matter what you do to them, because they're just plants. Plants feel, so there you go. Everything's okay. I'm an idiot. Plants feel. I don't even know what the word means, feel, so I'm just going to use it like other idiots use it. Namely, scientists and morons who don't know what the hell they're talking about and how to describe reality accurately. So now plants feel. There you go, plants feel, and so do animals, so we can do anything we want to plants, and we can do anything we want to animals. There's no morality objectively, we don't need to learn about that. We can just keep focusing on arbitrary designations and flawed symbolic references to reality and keep our attachment to those erroneous definitions. We don't have to learn anything about reality objectively, certainly not morality, and our behaviors and the consequences to our behaviors. That would be too painful to look at ourselves in the mirror, honestly. So we got to keep being cowards to truth and morality, trying to justify, to invent rights, to invent truth when it's not there. So I'll begin. We, humans, create words to reflect reality. The naked eye for discerning reality can clearly see there is a fundamental difference between plant life and animal life at the very least. Here are some discernible classes of living things we have come to understand with the help of technological instruments. And that's referring to the Six Kingdoms of Life infographic. Can this reality of differences in life forms be seen in etymology that accurately reflects reality? Can this understanding of reality, that plants and animals are fundamentally different, be seen in the roots of our language used to describe reality? I wonder, can that be seen, other than just plain observance of events, phenomenon, and objects in reality and existence, which anyone should be able to do to discern the difference between plants and animals, but people don't like to look at reality honestly. They don't like to use their senses. They want to trust the words and technology of other people and use that as their capacity for discerning reality. They don't need to do it themselves. They're going to trust other people's interpretations. They're going to trust other people's technological derivations. And oh, well, now plants feel, because I don't know how to describe the word feel properly and what it actually means as a reflection of reality. Oh, but that guy, he's an authority. He's a, quote, scientist. So he's calling it feeling. Oh, it's feeling. Plants feel now. I'm not going to learn what the word means. I'm not going to learn how the word reflects reality to see if it's even applicable. I'm not even going to try to understand what the processes are being described through technology of the plants are and how they are not the same as what happens in plants. And I'm not going to understand that either. I'm just going to be ignorant. I'm going to say plants feel. Well, I'm suggesting we do a little more doubting, be a little more curious and ask more questions to really understand the difference. Because clearly there's a difference, but people don't want to see it. Because that would force them to see things as they are. That animals are not plants. And then they might have to do something about their actions and change themselves. God forbid. Because that would require actual effort and work on themselves, dedication, persistence, and determination to reprogram the subconscious processes and habits that you've engaged in since you were indoctrinated into them, since your birth, into perpetuating evil and immorality in this world. So yeah, it takes a lot of work to change. First, you got to admit that there's a problem and there's a need to change, but you can't even do that because you can't face reality. So can we understand reality that plants are fundamentally different from animals through the roots of language used to describe reality itself? Yes, we can. Yes, we can. So this article and audio deals with etymology on life, live, leave, leaf, experience, active, act, do, fact, passive, plant, interact, pain, organism, organic, work, bio, choice, taste, plant, plane, place, sprout, sense, sentient, feel, emotion. And then I have all the content sections. So first is life, live, leave, leaf, experience, act, action, axiom, do, fact, passive, death, kill, murder, plants, pain, free will, choice, organ, work, bio, choice and taste, plant, place, plane, sensing, feeling, and emotion, hive mind, collective consciousness, programmed life, free will, consciousness, and evil capacities related to natural moral law. It's quite a long article, so the audio will probably be quite long as well. Probably over 2 hours, I'm estimating. Life, live, leaf, leave. Life. Existence, lifetime, way of life. Meaning a property which distinguishes living from non-living matters from the 1560s. Then we have the sense of the vitality and energy, the vital energy, elan vital, and gets into the whole conception of the vital energy everywhere, and that's a possibility, it's a conception. But that's not what I'm focusing on, because it's only a conception. It's not a reflection of reality. It's an attempted induction to try to provide an answer for why there's a difference between living and non-living matter, biological and non-biological. But in essence, all matter is living, it's all moving at the atomic level, subatomic level, everything's moving, so it's all in motion. So it's, quote, alive. It's not alive, but if you want to look at it that way, it's not dead in the sense that it doesn't move because it moves. So you can't talk about everything being alive simply from the aspect of movement, because everything in the universe is alive. The rock is alive. Everything has movement. But we don't live at the quantum levels, which is why, again, we shouldn't use technology, we should use our senses in order to make sense of reality. Stop using technology to say, oh, plants feel, because they don't. Stop using technology to say, well, oh, everything's one, it's all the quantum world, and that's what matters. No, we don't live there. We live here. So technology can cloud your ability to discern reality properly, which is the problem we have right now. With an inability to think properly for ourselves and use the faculties of the senses that we have in us innately in order to discern reality. We have life as a term of duration of inanimate objects. That's from 1703. So first it was about living things, and then it became, well, just a term of duration, just a time. Even of inanimate things, so you can have the life cycle of a toy product, the life cycle of a rock, eventually it'll erode. There's life cycles for everything, but it doesn't mean that it's alive. It's not the original life. So life has existence and lifetime. Yeah, everything has an existence and everything has a lifetime. But obviously that's not what we're talking about when we talk about life. It's just in the etymology, that's all it means, just existence and lifetime. An atom exists inside of a rock, it all exists, it all has a possible lifetime, maybe the atom decays at some point, I don't know. The electrons go popping in and out, in shells and valence. So things have lifetimes, you have the radioactive decay, things have a lifetime there. And things exist. So everything in the universe exists. That's the primacy of existence. That's what we start with. When you start with the primacy of consciousness, and consciousness creates reality because of some alleged conception brought about through the imagination factory and abstraction engine of consciousness that, oh, well, the universe is consciousness, and God is consciousness, and God is the prime mover of first cause, and that's consciousness. So everything is consciousness, and matter's just a secondary. No. You're taking fantasy imagination from your mind, and your subjective unreality, and you're projecting it onto reality, as a reality, but all you're doing is just tricking yourself. You're screwing yourself. This is a self-cast spell. This is the power of consciousness where we don't need other people to lie to ourselves. We are perfectly capable of lying to ourselves alone, through our own inventions of our own mind, so that we can feel good about things. A lot of this is tied to the fear of death and the fear of the unknown and the insecurity, doubt, and the discomfort that comes with that. So we gotta project ourselves onto a creation aspect, so project us as creator, generator, gods, which I've talked about in other audios. You should go listen to that, where this symbolism, analogy, metaphor, parabolic allegory comes from. The story narrative is created from a reflection of ourselves, transposed onto an imagined concept, a belief. So now creator is consciousness, like us, in the image of us, like us, us like it. And it creates everything, and consciousness is everywhere, and that's what's the most important, and it only goes into matter. But somehow, the vital essence is what goes into matter, and it animates the body. We have all these beliefs to try to make sense of things, to try to provide us with answers. This is where you get into bullshit when you put consciousness as the primary. Existence is primary. The universe would exist without humans in it. Get over yourself, you egomaniacal idiots. And that's what it is. It's all ego. You don't realize that because you don't understand psychology. Thinking that, oh, well, my consciousness is all that I can prove, like solipsism. So that's the base of reality is consciousness. So some people don't even understand how they're self-contradictory. They say, well, oh, solipsism is bullshit, but then they're gonna spout some bullshit of solipsism about how consciousness is primacy. And existence comes from consciousness. But then they'll say, oh, well, solipsism is bullshit and blah, 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 and they'll talk about solipsism, but they won't even realize how they themselves are engaged in forms of solipsism. Why? Because they're holding on to beliefs that provide them with answers for questions that they want to have answers to. This is from an ego, a negative ego, the negative ego personality identity construct of insecurity, doubt, discomfort. And they need to alleviate that. So you believe in concepts that is a transposition, a projection from ourselves, personified onto a belief that we've invented from consciousness. The consciousness is primary, so that means we as humans are primary, because then we associate ourselves as pure consciousness, and that's where we come from, and that's where we're going back to. And it's all beliefs. It's not objective reality, it's subjective, induced concepts from yourself and from other people that you mix in and alter and change and try to make sense of, because that's what we do. We ask questions and we try to make sense of reality. The problem is not knowing how the words we use reflect reality and how what we're describing reflects or doesn't reflect reality. And we use technology as a bypass to try to understand reality when we don't even understand the basics, such as existence comes first, which has identity, and then consciousness comes after. That's where we're able to identify the things in existence. We're able to provide meaning, definition, and we can form axioms of understanding reality. So, to continue with the article, life, described as an aspect of physical matter, distinguished from others not like it, non-living, is from the 1560s. Even later, the word was applied to any object that has a, quote, term of duration, as in the lifetime of a product that any industry can make. Anything that comes into being in a period of time, such as animals, plants, or man-made products, can be said to have life, because it was not existing before, previously, and now exists, and presumably will no longer exist in its complete form after the forces of time and erosion wear it down. Simply existing as an object in reality qualifies as, quote, life in this meaning. But that is not what most of us consider as life. Life does not seem to be a very useful word etymologically if we consider anything in existence as having life, as this etymology describes as a definition. It's not very useful in talking about life, because then everything in existence has life, so then the word becomes just another word to talk about things that exists. Reality. So then it loses its purpose, as far as I'm concerned. The other meanings apply more to a living as a being, to living as a being in reality that interacts. So the more proper meaning has to do with interaction in reality, to living as a being in reality that interacts, which are animals. That's where in the six kingdoms of life, Yaddle interacts with the environment, and things interact with themselves at their micro level, and they build their little cell communities and whatever. But that's not life of interaction. When we talk about having a life and living a life, that requires motion and mobility and interaction. Only animals are in this category of life, what we talk about as life. Not simply as a lifetime and existing, because everything has that. So, interaction in reality as a, quote, way of life, and the, quote, condition of being a living thing, which is contrary to, quote, death. So people want to say, oh, plants die too. Yeah, in a sense, yeah, and so do cells and everything. Cells in our body die, but that's not death. It's death for the cell, but that's the word we use, death, for the termination of a lifetime. It's the death of a product. And the product, at the end of its lifetime, it becomes dead and no longer usable. So these are words we use to reflect reality, but what's the truer sense of the word? Well, we're talking about the experience of a living being, a creature that has interactivity and mobility, a way of life, even has its own personality in the higher order consciousness constructs of the animal kingdom. You can see this in many mammals, even non-mammals. They have different personalities, they behave differently. Even though there's a basic level of biology and survival and different complexes and capacities of consciousness, animals do have their own individuality. Well, the higher order ones, it is detectable. We can see it through the way they behave and act, that they are individual identities. Individual ego personality identity constructs within themselves through their own existence. So we have live, to be, to live, have life, to experience. And that's from the Proto-Indo-European LEIP, leap. To remain, continue. And that comes from leave, which we'll look at as well. I just want to say, I don't know if it says leap, or lipe, or leap, or lap, but I just see leap when I look at the word, L-E-I-P. If you want to look at it that way in a sort of a green language, well, leap. To live is to leap. You got to be able to leap. You got to be able to jump and move and get around. That's the animal kingdom. So experience, remain, continue. The original source of live means to remain, continue, which biological forms are less remaining and less continuing than non-biological forms that exist in time for longer periods. Rocks, for instance, last longer than biological things, so it does not appear that it means that. The later meanings have more pertinence and clarity of expression, such as to experience. The Proto-Indo-European root leap is related to leave. Also, the later convention of making a residence is related to those with mobility and having a place of residence to inhabit, as it serves as a protection and guards us. Because you don't have a residence unless you can move about. If you're stationary, you don't have a domicile, you don't have a residence to move about and inhabit or not inhabit. Plants don't have residences. They don't have mobility. Only animals do. Animals create shelters. Also, what resides is what is to be left, like a residue, and the residence is left behind, while the mobile life can live outside of the residence. Plants and animals leave a biological residue after they stop sustaining the biological vehicle. So biological life dies and doesn't live and have life as long as much as a rock. So rocks are more alive, have more life, and live longer. According to this, you know, overly generalized conception, which is completely false as far as I'm concerned to use this in words. We don't use life in this way. We don't use live in this way. But when you take it just from the etymology, to remain and continue from the root, well, the rock does that better than we do. We only have a way shorter lifespan than they do. And then we leave traces behind. We leave residue. But a residence and residue, you see, they have the same root. But a residence is something we can leave because we have mobility as animals. All animals can leave their residence and be mobile and have a life outside of their residence. Plants live as biological life, not as rocks, so they're more similar to animal organic life. But they're biological and they're planted in a place. They're in the ground and they don't have a residence. They don't move. They're not interactive. They grow to occupy space as they grow. That's the only way they can move. To occupy different spaces by occupying more space, by growing. We don't have that limitation to occupy space. We can actually move. All animals are capable of movement, interact. That's where the real life is, and that's where real living is in the animal kingdom. So we have the word leave, to remain, to have left, bequeath, a remnant of what remains. Again, from Proto-Indo-European leap, L-E-I-P, that's something that sticks and adheres. We have the word leaf. We have the leaf of a plant, page of a book, and that's from Proto-Indo-European L-E-U-P instead of L-E-I-P. L-E-U-P. That's to peel or break off. So leave has the same root as live, which is Proto-Indo-European L-E-I-P. But instead of remain or continue, it is stick and adhere. Leave is additionally described with to have left, as in what is left over, and the old Saxon farlibid, or left behind. This can be related to trace, as in leaving a trace behind, which I've done another etymological article on, there's a link to. Only causal agents move on their own and leave traces from moving. Something like grease or oil can be sticky and adhere as it is moved by a causal agent. Things can leave traces to be traced, but not everything can do that on its own. A mover can move itself, be moved by others, move others, or move other things. And the mover is the causal agent, which is an animal. A mover can move itself, be moved by others, or move other things. Things left behind that leave tracks represent a causal agent mover, and they also stick and adhere to that source force in their current state of existence as a remnant track left behind. So the oil and the grease left behind. Well, they adhere to, if you take your finger, you as a causal agent and you smear it somewhere, well, you have that trace, that track of smearing that oil or that grease or whatever you want. But it's also on your finger too, so that it's also left behind on the source force, your finger. There's a trace on that as well. The causal force started something and created an effect, a track to be traced. This force remains and continues after the effect upon reality that creates a track of its existence, something left behind that is attached, adhered, and sticking to the source by way of causal relations. This force remains and continues after the effect upon reality that creates a track of its existence, something left behind that is attached, adhered, and sticking to the source by way of causal relations. I'm just making the point that for a track to leave a trace, you need a causal force. And that force, a causal agent that created that force, remains and continues after the effect of leaving a track that can be traced in reality. That is how the word live can relate to the etymological source, even though it does not make sense at first. See, what do you mean? Remain, have left, bequeath, remnant, stick and adhere. How do these things relate? How do you make sense of it? Well, I just did. To leave something relating to that sticking and adhering. Well, it requires a causal agent. So you can see leave and leaves. So it's something that's left behind. Yeah, but it's just something that falls off every year. The leaves fall off. Our arms don't fall off. Animals' arms don't fall off. Things like that don't fall off. Branches fall off. Things fall off and they keep growing. Plants are not like animals. They are like animals in some ways. They're biological as opposed to non-biological. But the way that they exist is very different. Just like a way a rock exists is very different. A decoding of the symbolism, the words, and their references to reality must be synthesized to provide the connectivity between the word and the etymological root source. To live is to be a causal agent that can leave something behind, like tracks. In the greater sense, everything biological also leaves a track when it ceases to have life. It becomes dead and moves on, but leaves the matter behind that decays and disappears, much as tracks disappear. So as I said before, on a residue and a residence, or when plants or animals die, they leave a residue that eventually fades. So everything biological leaves a track, along with everything else in existence, right? Because by existing, well, you're leaving a track that you exist. In that bigger sense. So in that sense, then everything leaves tracks. But it makes less sense, it's less applicable as a useful word, just like live as just existence. Anything having a life, a shelf life, well, that's anything in existence. You know, suns die after a time, and planets, maybe they'll collide, and after the sun dies and the supernova explode, who knows? Things have a beginning and things have an end. So everything has a life. Everything lives in this global sense. Everything leaves trace, but it becomes pointless to talk about these definitions if we're going to only apply them in these global definitions and global perspectives. So everything biological does leave a track. In this view, it can be taken as all biological life. To live is not life, which will be looked at. To live is more like alive. When you, quote, feel alive, you are moving and energetic, either in physical body or the internal realms of consciousness. It is not passive to, quote, feel alive. When someone is, quote, feeling alive, they often go for a run or express extravagant behavior, because they are so full of energy that results in mobility and action. Now, this is only applicable to animals. Other animals display feeling alive. Now, you just think of a dog playing. A dog can play with other animals, and you can see that they're both alive and expressing being alive in the sense of life and living as we use it, that has the most descriptive capacity to reflect reality, as opposed to just saying live is anything in existence and life is anything in existence and live is anything that remains and continues, that perseveres and persists. Well, in that general way, well, it's pretty useless to think of everything in that sense, because then it loses meaning. So where is it the most applicable? Well, live, life, leave is alive, and that's the animal kingdom. So when you work with words, you start to understand where they are applicable. So to bring back plants, from leave we can think of leaves and leaf. Leaf is from the Proto-Indo-European L-E-U-P, similar to L-E-I-P. The U and I change. It is originally to peel or break off, to think of leaves again. Something that remains, that is left behind, can be something that is broken off or peeled off from something else. So you peel off, you break off something, L-E-U-P, a leaf, and then it's leaved behind, L-E-I-P, it's a remnant. So it's broken off and left behind. This is how I see L-E-U-P, leaf, relating to L-E-I-P, leave. A book page is peeled away from the whole. Similarly, a leaf is a thin peel representative of the whole. So when you look at the word leaf, it relates to a book page and a leaf. So you're peeling away the leaf from the tree, you're peeling away the page from the book as you progress through the book. A leaf and leaves on a tree are called such because they fall off, peel off, break off. That leaves a trace of the tree it came from, but they don't make tracks of their own because they do not move on their own. Plants don't make traces. Leaves don't make traces. Leaves fall off, peel off, break off, as per the definition of a leaf. That's exactly what they do. And there are remnants left behind like leaves, something that leaves a trace. But they don't do it on their own. It's a part of a biological process of survival as the seasons go by. As much as cells fall off of our body from our skin, we're not making it happen. It's a biological process. It's automated. There's no consciousness involved in that process. It's all automated as per biological functionality. There's no free will deciding, oh, I'm going to flick off this dead cell and not this one from my skin. So I'm going to have this one automatically just fall off and not the other one. There is no control over that. It's automated. Leaves fall off of trees and hit the ground and there's a trace. And then the wind, a causal force, can take the leaf and bring it somewhere else where the tree isn't. And then, well, it's leaving a track somewhere else, but the tree didn't do it. All the tree did was grow, because it's a base biological in the six kingdoms of life. It's a sustainer of life, of other higher order complexity in the animal kingdom. Plants can leave traces with their released body parts, such as branches, leaves, or dropped fruits, nuts, or seeds. Plants cannot leave traces on their own, for they are not mobile. Plants require a part of themselves to become detached, quote, dead, and leave a trace of themselves behind, a remnant. Animals cannot do this. We don't break off remnants of ourselves and leave them behind as part of our yearly growth. The traces animals leave are from our mobility, which plants do not have. When animals die, then they leave a trace behind from themselves, as do plants when they die as well. And then all biological life is recycled into the earth. That does not negate the difference in animal and plant life. So yes, there's a similarity. Because we're biological life and we have a shorter lifespan and existence than a rock, we have similar recycling patterns in the earth where we decay and get recycled into the earth. Bravo for recognizing that. It does not mean plants or animals in any substantive way in terms of the most important thing, which is truth and morality and right action. Plants aren't even in the same field of experience and existence as animals. It's two completely different aspects of the six kingdoms of life. The next section is experience, act, action, axiom, do, fact, passive. So experience, we have a trial, proof, experiment, knowledge, trials, enterprising, active, and from try, from e out of, and peritus, which is experienced, tested. And peritus is from the Proto-Indo-European root per, to lead or pass over, such as in peril. So experience, knowledge, trials, enterprising, active, try, test. Live, to live, to be living, and later I will relate this to alive, is to have an experience, as well as the ability to leave behind tracks. An experience is an active undertaking. You have to have mobility and interactivity. Plants do not have mobility and interactivity. Okay? They are a more passive living biological forms of matter. They're not active. They don't go through trials and tribulations of life. They have survival aspects, yeah. They try to survive in where they are. And that's where they are, and they try to survive as long as they can, and then they can die. There's not enough water, there's not nutrients, they can't move around to go find things, they're not active. They don't experience like animals do. They don't try, test, and have trials and gain knowledge like animals do. They don't experiment like animals do. They're not enterprising like animals are. An experience is an act of undertaking. I know that I, as a human animal, part of animal kind, am capable of trying things, judging, experiencing, and I can see this same type of experience in other non-human animals. Plants do not share the same type of reality and living as animals. So we get to active and act from ager. To do, set in motion, drive, urge, chase, stir up. And that's from the Proto-Indo-European ag, which I've looked at in previous articles on kind and kin, genus, and care, and also the article Axioms, Existence, Consciousness, and Identity. And ag is to draw out, to drive, go forth and move. And we have some cognates here. Again, or agin, A-G-E-I-N, from Greek, to lead, guide, drive off, carry. Moving, active, from the Sanskrit, ajira. So act is related to axioms, and I quote here from my previous article. Ag relates to ga, from kind, in meaning as well as being the inverse in letters. Ga indicates an association, togetherness, completeness, or wholeness. Ga relates to ge, G-E, and genus, generation, care, etc. All of this generation, care, beginning, happening is the action, the effect, that culminates from internal causal forces of consciousness, thought, and emotion. Action has the same source as axiom, A-G. To get to G-A, the resulting complete wholeness of something manifesting, you need A-G, an active driving force that drives, draws, and moves us. These are from within consciousness. These are images that reflect reality directly or indirectly through a conception. We then generate with these internal forces the external results we produce as a whole complete manifestation from our consciousness, thoughts, emotions, and actions, out into the world. At least that is how proper manifestation occurs in unity consciousness. So we get to the word do, make, act, perform, cause, to put, to place, from the Proto-Indo-European D-H-E, so de, I guess. That's to put, place, do, make, and it's related to factitious. So we look at factitious. Made by or resulting from art, artificial. From facere, to do. And we look at facere, the Latin word facere. To make, act, take action. Be active, compose, write, classify, do, make, create, make, build, construct, produce. That's from the same root, D-H-E, de, so do, and facere, come from the same root. We have fact, to do, fact, factitious, facere, fact, those all relate. So fact. Action, anything done, especially an evil deed, apparently, is what it used to connotate. An event, occurrence, deed, achievement, a thing done. Facere, to do, is where it comes from. So it's a thing done. The main modern sense of thing known to be true is from the 1630s, from the notion of something that has actually occurred. So it's, we view facts as synonymous with truth, because something that's been done is something that actually occurred versus something that hasn't been done and hasn't occurred. So it's a fact. It's anything done in action. And becomes a fact. It's a truth now. It's known to be true. It happened, as opposed to not happening. It's a deed, achievement, thing done. Now, thoughts, emotions, and actions. Actions are only done by animals, not plants. So again, I'm just showing how animals are animals and plants are not animals. No matter how much bullshit you want to spin inside of your mind because you can't face moral objectivity, you can't see reality as it is, you keep lying to yourself. Learn words. Learn how they reflect reality. Factitious, facere, fact is artificial. You need to be able to create it. And that only comes from arms and hands. Only animals have that. Birds have beaks they use. Okay? You need to be a mobile, interactive being in order to do things, to act factitiously, and facere and fact and do things, to build and construct and produce. And there's the basic aspect, you know, the general aspect of producing by growth. So yeah, all plants do that. But that's not what we're talking about when we talk about doing, making and acting, to putting in place. Artificial creations and actions, deeds and achievements, things done. We're not thinking about plants when we think about these words. So learn how words reflect reality. We have the word passive, from passif in French. Suffering, undergoing, hardship. From Latin, passivus. Capable of feeling or suffering. And then we have passion. We have the word The meaning of not active is first recorded in the late 15th century. 15th century. So we see how normally when we think of passive, we automatically think of not active, which is generally how it's supposed to apply. You have doing an action, active, and then you have passive. Well, that'd be the opposite, not active. But that's the later connotation derived from the previous aspect of a deeper meaning of suffering and undergoing hardship, capable of feeling or suffering. So you can say, well, in the later sense of not active, plants are passive in that sense. But in terms of passive reception, whereas humans and other animals can just passively be submissive as a slave consciousness and suffer and undergo hardship without doing anything about it, capable of feeling or suffering, only animals are capable of this. Plants are not. So the meaning of plants being passive is a later derivation of being non-active. But the true sense of passive, relating to passion and suffering and feeling, well, only animals are capable of that. If you really think about it, sure, they can endure a storm and get beaten around the plants, but it's not feeling or suffering as we understand it, as other animals understand it, because plants are not animals. And they're passive in the sense of not being active, they're not mobile, and they can't move around, they can't save themselves, they can't change their environmental conditions. They're stuck as a lower order kingdom of life, and they're there to provide life for higher order kingdoms. Without plants, there are no animals living. Animals are dead. Plants are required. Plants are the sustainer. Plants are the life giver, just like the sun and Mother Earth, Mother Goddess symbolism, and the sun symbolism. Well, they're the providers of life and air symbolism. Well, air provides life. Without air, there is no animal life. Without plants, there is no animal life. Without the sun, there is no animal life. Without the sun, there is no plant life. So the sun is the prime causer of all life, and that's why the god symbolism in Egypt and Sumer and everywhere else in the world, that's always viewed the sun as the life giver. And then that gets anthropomorphized, personified, and projected through consciousness and our inner subjectivity and identities. And we reflect ourselves onto other things in order to try to relate it to ourselves in reality and try to make sense of it. So the sun becomes the creator of everything, the life force providing aspect that we can see in reality, but it's all inducted from the imagination factory of our consciousness to try to make sense of where life comes from, because we can see that the sun gives life, so then the sun becomes God, and it's all conceptions from consciousness that we create in order to try to provide answers, and the sun creates life, well then the sun dies every day and we die. And, then we're going to create afterlife beliefs and reincarnation beliefs and recycling beliefs and all these beliefs, because we have a very powerful imagination and we have a greater degree of fear from our own imaginations. Lower order consciousness animals have fear, but it's directly related to realities in front of them. They don't have these abstraction, imagination fantasies to make them fear things that just exist inside the subjective reality of the multiverse of their imaginations, where we can create universe after universe after universe in our minds and play out scenarios and think of things that don't exist, and we just create problems for ourselves. This is the double-edged sword of consciousness and imagination, as I've mentioned in other audios on symbolism and grounding in reality and beliefs. So if we look at the word act and its cognates, with the related Proto-Indo-European root ag, to do, set in motion, drive, urge, chase, stir up, the cognates of a leader, right? Because a leader usually is sets in motion, drives, and urges others to do things. And see if that applies to plants in general or to animals in general. Take that word act and its cognates and think of reality and how that word reflects reality and see if it applies to plants or animals. Doing things, setting things in motion, chasing, stirring up, leading. It seems fairly clear to me that active living beings are animals, not plants. Plants are not active in this sense and are, quote, passive living beings in the sense of being non-active. Not in the sense of passions and feelings like other animals physiologically expressed through their consciousness. Plants are passive in that they do not receive and suffer attacks, with some having programmed sense responses to release defensive chemicals, etc. Plants are responsive in that they do receive and suffer attacks. I think I said I do not. So they, in the sense of suffering, hardship, as I just mentioned before getting into this paragraph, they do receive and suffer attacks, and some of them have programmed sense responses to relieve defensive chemicals. And we're going to get into senses, feeling, and emotion, as I've indicated at the top in the contents. That'll be a later section. So just remember the passive part in suffering and undergoing hardship. You can look at my other articles on bearing good and evil, which has to do with compassion, sympathy, and empathy. This applies to animals. It's not a plant thing. So they cannot go anywhere. They cannot run away. They are not active. They are not mobile. They are not interactive. Is a rock passive? Yes, it will endure, suffer, and bear weight, or whatever is done to it. You can put a rock, you can put a car on a rock. It's not going to cry and yell and have tears and feel pain. You can do the same thing to a plant. The plant's just going to take it. And you'll break it, and then it'll die because it doesn't have its connection to its roots, which suck up water and other nutrients, and then it's dead. There's its lifespan, there's its shelf life, there's its existence, and goes back to the ground and decays. You can shoot a human in the head, and the same thing. There's the end of their existence, there's their shelf life gone, and they start to decay because they don't have energy in their body flowing anymore from electrochemical, biological processes that allow the life in that vehicle to be sustained. So once your consciousness and your brain is shut down, well, there's no more electricity being generated, being sent all over the body, so you die. But then you're going to go decay and back to the earth. So rocks bear more. They can have cars put on them. They don't die. They bear weight and they just endure and suffer it. A rock is more passive and less active than a plant, since a plant grows and moves in that limited way to have the most limited activity while bearing whatever is done to it as a passive thing like a rock. So it just bears it like a rock. It might have electrochemical stimulus going through it, but it doesn't have a nervous system, it doesn't have a brain. It doesn't feel things. It has signals. There is communication. Cells. Bacteria have signals. They communicate. They exist in a community. They interchange. That's what plants do. I want to talk about, the root networks. Plants, it's like a neural network. No, it's not. Tell me that a petri dish is a neural network. They communicate. They interchange. They survive as a system. Plants are not animals. You need to get over it. Really learn the words in reality and really look at reality and learn from reality. Plants are not animals. So death, kill, murder, plants. Death is not kill and is not murder. Murder is death. Kill is death. Words matter. Order matters. Different actualities of existence, death, kill, murder, do not result in the same definition. This is identity, where differences create additional definition. A plant can die, but is not killed or murdered. Animals die, possibly as a result of being killed or murdered. This is all contained in the etymology. See my other article on killing and murder for those specifics. As for plants, they do not harm and therefore do no murder. Since they are not capable of harm, they are not capable of being killed in response to harm done. There is no killing. There is no murder. It is only death of a biological life form. A planet can die. A star can die. Does the star have a will to create harm? Can it therefore create murder? Can it therefore kill in response to harm? No. Animals are capable of using their will to engage in action and harm others, but they are amoral in that they do not understand what morality is, and therefore they cannot murder, as murder is a moral word based on a violation of rights that we recognize as higher order consciousness moral beings. So my point is, if something cannot harm another, then it cannot kill another or even murder it, even if it's a higher order consciousness being. If it's a lower order consciousness being, it can create harm and it can kill, but it can't murder because it doesn't understand murder. We can understand it because we are higher order consciousness beings. Plants cannot create harm and they cannot kill, and therefore they cannot be harmed and they cannot kill. It's very simple to understand. An animal can create harm and can kill. Therefore, an animal can be harmed and can kill. A plant cannot create harm and cannot kill. A plant cannot be harmed and cannot be killed. It's very, very simple once you understand it. Look at reality. Stop just looking at my words and, oh, well, no, they can be killed because it's dying, and killing is a death. Yes, it is a form of a death, but death itself is just death. Death does not require killing and does not require murder. You cannot murder a plant, you cannot kill a plant, you cannot harm a plant. It has a life, it grows. And that does not mean we can just go around plucking up every plant and chopping down everything just because it's a plant. What's the point of that? See, there has to be purpose and meaning behind doing things. You don't just do things just to do them. So no, you can't. Just because you can go around and put an end to all of the plant life doesn't mean you're going to be a killer for it. You're going to be a moron because you're doing something that doesn't make any sense and has no purpose and meaning. Just to be a destroyer. It's like you can mine things. What if there's nothing to mine? Let's just dig mile-long holes and of just mining for fun. We could just mine for fun, right? We just dig up stuff and dig and dig and dig and for no point, no meaning. We'd be morons destroying the planet and making holes and destroying ecosystems. But there's no point behind it. So when you do take from the earth, there's usually a point. And when you take from animals, when you take from plants, there's usually a point. And even when you take from animals, there's usually a point. Because you want what they have. But animals have their own life. Just like we have our own lives. They are not plants. Plants are not animals. Plants do not live like animals live. They do not have life like animals have life. They don't experience like we experience. They don't act. They don't do. They don't create facts. They're not artificially creating things. They're not producing. They produce fruits for us to live from. That's their basic function. They don't produce habitats of shelters. They don't produce nests. They don't produce furrows and holes to survive in. Animals do these things because animals move and interact and are capable of being active. They're not simply passive receivers. They can be, but they're not passive as in non-active. Animals are active, plants are passive in that sense. So plants can't harm, they can't kill, they can't murder. Animals can harm and can kill. Higher order consciousness beings understand that they can murder. And they can have harm, killing, and murder applied to them. Animals of a lower order consciousness can have harm and killing applied to them. Plants can't, because plants can't do it. It's very easy when you understand this. For something to be able to receive something, they have to be able to create it. So if you can create harm and you can create killing, then you can receive harm and you can receive killing, which is all animals. Plants grow and die, grow and die. They don't create new things, nests, etc., and change things themselves like animals can do with their will. Plants die and create soil for the actual environment that exists for animals to exist in. Without plants, there are no animals. Plants are required for animal life on Earth. I don't know about the sea. Maybe they get their oxygen in some special way, and it's has nothing to do with algae and other aspects of other animal kingdoms. Anyways, that's beside the point. They grow and die and create the initial environment for animals to live, and they continue to provide what is required for animals to live. No plants means no higher order life. I have spoken of this plant purpose before. Doing and acting is related to making, creating, and again, we see the link, as I mentioned previously, in etymology on axioms, existence, and consciousness, on ag and ga-ge, on ag and ga/ge, for generation, creation, etc. Animals are causal agents that can alter the environment and create new things. They do not create the environment as plants do, but alter and use it to their advantage, as plants are purposefully there to provide for animals to live. Birds can build nests, for example, which is something created from the environment.